Mets come roaring back against the Dodgers, and folks, we got a series. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Tuesday, October 15th. You're home for news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. Follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, we're going to get into game one of Yankees Guardians in just a few minutes and talk about how rough that was for Cleveland and whether they can rebound or not. But we got to start with Mets Dodgers because one, that was the first game played yesterday chronologically, but two, this was such an interesting result after being shut out in game one and seeing that scoreless inning streak of LA stretch, you know, much later than we absolutely thought it was going to. This is a 7-3 Mets victory. Very just commanding the way they did this. They're up 6-0 in the second. And while LA gets a little bit back in the fifth and sixth, the Mets score one more time in the ninth. And this really isn't that close, thanks to the heroics of Mark Vientos. Francisco Lindor hits a home run in the first inning, but when he comes back up in the second, Landon Knack intentionally walks him to load the bases for Mark Vientos, who after the game said, "I took it personal." And what does he do? He launches a grand slam to really just kind of put this one away very early. There's a lot of stuff to get to from this game. I think the first thing I want to get to, though, is maybe we shouldn't have been surprised that the Mets were able to win a bullpen game. Because I don't necessarily know if everybody realizes how good the Mets have been against bullpens in this postseason. Okay, think about their first two series that they played. The Brewers starters had an ERA under 3, allowed 4 earned runs in those 3 games to the Mets lineup. The Phillies rotation allowed 6 runs in 21 and a third innings. It's a 2.53 ERA. But we all know the Mets advanced because they were able to just blast the bullpen. Pete Alonso hit a 3-run home run in the ninth off of Devin Williams. They were able to take care of Jeff Hoffman and Matt Strom of the Phillies, who were both all-stars this year. And I want to read you here the ERAs by the Mets against two of the better bullpens in the postseason. Milwaukee relievers had an ERA of 5.65 against the Mets. Phillies relievers had an ERA of 11.37 against the Mets. What is it about bullpens that just cannot handle the vibes of the New York Mets?
I don't know. Is it fear? I really don't know. I really have no clue. And you think that it would have worked out great because the Dodgers bullpen game worked fantastic against San Diego. And you'd think that would be more of a challenge because you've seen San Diego so many times in the regular season. Mm-hmm. But the Mets have just found a way to do great things against the bullpen. I'm still head scratching a little bit about walking Lindor to load the bases for Mark Vientos because both have been super hot. It's tough for me to make the call. You just had Lindor who it seems like he's automatic at the plate right now. He is completely locked in, but Mark Vientos is not far behind him right now in the postseason. Dave Roberts seemed quite sure. He put his finger up and pointed to first base pretty dang quick to get him the first base. To me, that's a lose-lose situation, you know, but then again, you know, would you rather risk Lindor hitting the home run and only getting 3 runs and then bringing up Ventos with a solo shot possibly, or with Mark Vientos, you're giving him just one chance to do a grand slam? It was a very tough decision. Like I was pondering back and forth, like, man, do you do this? Should you do this? And I know it was a big controversy and debate on social media all yesterday during the game. I will say this. When it comes to this bullpen and the Dodgers bullpen, I don't think we should see Landon Knack for the rest of the postseason. He's got a 15 ERA, matches with all the rest of the Brewers bullpen, as you mentioned, the Phillies bullpen, as you mentioned. He's got a 15 ERA for the postseason, just his two outings. He did not look good. He was throwing pitches over the middle, over the middle of the plate, Lindsay, and some of them were very low speed. You could see a replay of the home run for Vientos, and you could see the ball go up and go down, and you could see Vientos just kind of get ready. You can almost see him start grinning. He was like ready to go. He was tasting that home run, and it was incredible. But yeah, definitely a shock to me after what I saw from the Dodgers bullpen in San Diego heading into this. But you're right. We probably shouldn't be too surprised. You mentioned how they were great against the other teams with their bullpen. And I'll even add this on top of it. The Mets have 56 or 57 different times this season, regular season and postseason included, scored four runs or more in an inning. That's crazy. That is a huge amount of times that's happened in a year. And why are we surprised that they found a way to do it again in the postseason and bounce back and tie the series against the Dodgers? This is going to be a series. I think we got a little bit too ahead of ourselves in the episode yesterday. This is going to be a series. It's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, giving the Mets their flowers, since Lindor moved to the leadoff spot on May 18th, the Mets OPS as a team of 760, fourth best in baseball. They scored 585 runs, fourth best in baseball. And I didn't look all the way back in the season, but just off the top of my head, this hasn't been just a postseason thing on scoring on bullpens. If you remember that doubleheader on that Monday, they played against Atlanta. Braves are winning late in game one. And what happens? They get a big home run in the eighth inning. They score a bunch of runs off of Joe Jimenez and Raisel Iglesias, Atlanta's two best relievers, to take a lead. After Ozzie Albies gives Atlanta a lead in the bottom of the eighth, they turn around in the ninth and get a home. I believe it's Lindor gets a home run in the ninth to take the lead again. And so just something that they've been able to do kind of repeatedly. And they've knocked off two of the best three teams in the National League by seeding, obviously, taking down the Brewers, who were the third seed, I believe, and then the Phillies, who were the two seed. And now they're facing off with the Dodgers here, and they're going to get to go back home for some games with it tied versus what we kind of thought originally was that they were going to end up going down 2-0 and be fighting for their lives. They have a chance. I don't know if they'll win three straight games, but they have a chance to clinch a World Series trip at home because they play on Wednesday and then they'll play again. I believe it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, which you have to think, given LA's rotation issues, that definitely favors the Mets getting three games in 3 days. And you can kind of see why LA went for a bullpen game today versus waiting to do a bullpen game a little bit later in the series, because you're going to have to cover three games from your bullpen, and you just don't know what these starters are going to do. Walker Buehler has been announced as Wednesday's starter already. He'll take on Luis Severino. And then Thursday, the Mets haven't announced a starter yet, but LA's announced Yamamoto as the starter on Thursday. And so there's obviously going to be some question here about how deep and how effective either one of those guys can be. And like you said, Landon Knack at least showed that not everybody out of this pen is going to be incredibly effective. I mean, this was something you don't see this a lot, I feel like, in the postseason. But, I mean, they went to the very back of their bullpen. Edgardo Hernandez threw two innings through the eighth and the ninth yesterday because this game was over. And that's just, I feel like that's just not a thing that you see a lot in October. But, you know, they used Brent Honeywell for three innings, and then Edgardo Hernandez pitched the final two just to try to get LA out of this game and get a chance to reset before they go back into it on Thursday. Do we think the top of the order can use the time off to find a way to be effective against the Mets? Because Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman combined for no hits yesterday. Betts walked once, Ohtani walked twice, Betts did come around to score. Betts also struck out three times. Ohtani struck out twice. Freeman went 0 for 5 with a strikeout. Do we think the time off will allow those guys maybe to figure out a better strategy at the plate? Because they've been pretty quiet this series so far.
Yeah, and they've been quiet at the plate when there's no one on base as well, especially Shohei Ohtani. 0 for 16 in the postseason when the bases are empty and Shohei Ohtani's up at the plate right now. That's a wild stat. But I agree. Yeah, the top of the lineup needs to do something. Because even though we had arguably the easiest steal in NLCS history of Pete Alonso stealing the base, I'm pretty sure he walked the second against Hernandez in, I believe, the eighth inning. If it wasn't for that run.
I'm sorry. Henriquez. I've been saying his name wrong the whole time.
Nope.
Sorry. Henriquez. I just looked again. Sorry. That's on me.
Yeah, guys. No, thank you. I will say this. If it wasn't for that run, Mookie Betts came up to the plate in the end of the game, and he would have came up as the tying run. So the game wasn't completely out of hand. So I think that actually might be a good thing that they were able to use some of those, dare I say, back of the bullpen guys, even though we're talking postseason. But when it comes to this Dodgers team right now, that's kind of what you have to talk about because of all the injuries. Yeah, they need to figure it out. The top of this lineup needs to figure it out. The Dodgers, you know, they went to Pajes for center field. They changed that up. That looked okay. He seemed great in center field. Tommy Edman is doing his thing at shortstop. He was, I believe, 4 for 5 in this game, if I'm correct. He looked really good. But, yeah, the struggles from Ohtani with bases empty, that's got to change. And Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts need to step up because you have to have your top three guys doing some big things in this series if you want to make it to the World Series, especially against this tough Mets team. Again, I think we went a little too quick. Maybe I shouldn't speak for both of us, but I definitely did after that first game. We shouldn't count the Mets out. They've made it this far after what they started the season. What did they start like? Was it 0-8? It was pretty bad.
It wasn't good. And I kind of would agree. I wrote them off a little bit early. And I think part of that was I hadn't gone back necessarily and looked to see exactly how good they were in the regular season. And I think a lot of this, I was kind of assuming was vibes. And like, no, they've legitimately been one of the better teams, better offenses in baseball, in the last half of the season, really. And real quick, finishing up with the Dodgers before I want to go back to the Mets real quick. Tommy Edman, 3 for 4. You're right. Only 5 hits for LA. 3 of them are Tommy Edman's. LA goes 1 for 9 with runners in scoring position and leaves 10 on base. The Mets don't do significantly better. They also leave 10 on base, and they go 4 for 12 with runners in scoring position, but that's 3 more successes than LA had, and they gave themselves more opportunities. 10 hits and 7 walks in the game. They absolutely took it to the LA bullpen. And I want to go back real quick before we move on to Mark Vientos, because I don't quite think he gets a lot of credit for the season that he had. 413 at-bats. He batted .266 with an .838 OPS. That's a big enough sample size where we can say it wasn't a fluke, right? Like, this is legitimately, he is much better than maybe we've been giving him credit for. And he absolutely has been a dude, like we said, in the postseason, batting .378 with a 1.0 OPS. I still do agree, intentionally walking Lindor, who homered in the previous inning, is probably the right move there, but you don't have to. It's a rock and a hard place, right? Having to walk Lindor to get to Vientos versus being able to pitch around Vientos and maybe get Brandon Nimmo, who was 0 for 4 and is batting just over .200 or something like that. There's no easy answers there. And given Lindor's body of work over Vientos, Vientos was good. Lindor was great in the regular season. I understand the decision. Obviously, it backfired in the situation.
No, I agree. Yeah, I know it's a tough decision, but I'm definitely not going to blame the manager on doing that. I'm not going to blame Dave Roberts doing that, but it definitely was between a rock and a hard place. You're right. For the record, just a little cleanup on my behalf, the Mets started 0-5, not 0-8 on this season. Yeah. And yeah, Vientos, you could make the argument that the Mets season turned around once they decided to call him up. I think you can make that. You can truly make that argument. And then talking about the runners in scoring position about the Mets, Francisco Alvarez has now left 7 runners on base in his three at bats yesterday. I mean, I think that there's an argument that you have to put Luis Torrens in for game three. I really do think there's an argument there because, you know, we're talking about having runners in scoring position. Francisco Alvarez has not looked good.
He has not. And it's something where breakout first season, struggled down the stretch this year. Kind of have to ask questions here. But I think that the catcher conversation there, it's a great segue to the Yankees-Guardians game one. 5-2 victory for the Yankees. And a lot of people are blaming what happened on Guardians reliever Joey Cantillo. He goes in the third inning, records one out, but three walks, is charged with four wild pitches, ends up allowing, you know, a run to score. Just not a good look there in the third inning. But this is something where I think the catcher plays a bigger part than we give credit for here. Bo Naylor absolutely did not do Joey Cantillo any favors. Cantillo's not blameless. He spiked a fastball, which I don't think you ever expect that to happen. But Naylor really, for a guy who's a above average blocker by Statcast this year, really struggled in the inning to stay in front of these pitches. Cantillo didn't really know where they were going, but Naylor didn't help him out. And I have to ask about the wisdom of starting Bo Naylor over Austin Hedges. Austin Hedges is seen as the much better defender, a blocker, game caller, I would argue as well. And I know that offensively, he's a bit challenged. He doesn't have a hit in the postseason, but Bo Naylor doesn't either. And so I think in retrospect, they realized that, and you saw them swap Hedges and Naylor in the game. Both guys got two at-bats because they pinch hit Hedges for Naylor and left Hedges out there. Just, you can't blame this entire loss, obviously. You can't blame this entire loss there on Cantillo, but just a rough showing for a Guardians pitching staff, and especially, you know, that I felt like had been pretty good. They get into an early hole because Alex Cobb has been owned in his career by Juan Soto. Had multiple home runs entering the day, homers to open the third inning. That's the third run, and I think the fifth hit off of Cobb in this one. Cobb walks three, now has an ERA in the postseason of almost 8. But the pitching as a whole just really kind of failed Cleveland, and when your offense has been as anemic as they have, you can't have bad pitching performances in postseason.
Yeah, what's the bigger superhero villain? Is it Alex Cobb versus Juan Soto, or is it Rafael Devers versus Garrett Cole? You know, it could be close, right? It could be close.
Well, one of these guys is still at home, so it's got to end up being Soto, because Devers is at home. They didn't even make it this year.
That's true. He's on the couch. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Hey, Bo Naylor, you're right. He has not looked good this postseason. He's hitless this postseason, and I'll even go back farther. And it's not that Hedges is any better, but in September, Naylor was 10 for 60. He batted 167 in the month of September. So if you add that with his postseason in his last 70 at-bats, I think actually last 73 at-bats, he's 10 for 73. That's not good. That's not good. You're basically asking for a guaranteed out. Now you're not asking for anything much better with Austin Hedges, but you're guaranteed to get better defense. Hedges is on that roster. He's been on a roster for the last 5 years because of his defense, like plain and simple. So I do think that you need to put him back there and keep him back there. Even if you have a back-to-back game right now, you're in the postseason. These catchers, you know, had off days on back-to-back days in the regular season to keep them ready for stuff like this. You can have a catcher go back-to-back in the postseason if you need to. And I think a veteran like Austin Hedges could also do that as well. Yeah, I think
Atlanta's 21, it's like personal just experience here. I think Atlanta's 2021 World Series run, I want to say Travis d'Arnaud started every single game. Like every single one, I believe, including when they had three in a row. So in the postseason, you can do it. Regular season, I wouldn't do that. Postseason, you can do it.
You know, and there's a lot of finger pointings for what happened with the relievers and obviously the catching conversation, but it's a lot bigger for Cleveland and their concern, Lindsay, because their stars aren't doing anything. Jose Ramirez is struggling. Andre Jimenez, I mean, you're paying him, what, over $100 million contract? He's had a terrible season this year. OPS of just over 6. He's got an OPS of 465 in the postseason this year. He needs to have himself a legacy game for Cleveland in this series, or they're going to be talking about how his 7-year, $106 million contract is one of the biggest busts in Guardians history. So, yeah, I do think we need to see a lot from him. Big.
It's not, oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why are you paying a second baseman that much money?
Because he made the All-Star game a couple years ago. You remember that?
And he batted 297. That's what it was. 22. He batted 297, was a sixth place finisher in the All-Star race.
Yep.
20 stolen bases, 17 home runs, gold glove for the first of two consecutive years. Golly, that is such a, it already looks like a terrible extension. I didn't even realize it was that big.
Yeah, he needs bigger issue, a legacy game in the ALCS here.
Like, yeah, Jose Ramirez, Jimenez, neither one of them has looked great. I think it's the offense as a whole. Of the all of the players that got in the game yesterday for Cleveland, they played 13 position players in this game between pinch hitters, defensive replacements, all of that. Exactly four of them are batting over 190, right? Brian Rocchio, 421. He goes 2-for-3 with a homer yesterday, which I was not expecting. That was his first of the postseason. Took Rodon deep. Stephen Kwan, we've already talked about that, batting 480. Both those guys have OPSs over 1,000. David Fry, he went 1-for-3 yesterday. He's batting 263. Lane Thomas is batting 273, although he went 0-for-3 yesterday. Everybody else is batting 190 or worse. And again, when your offense is as anemic as this, you've absolutely got to get better pitching performances than they have. Also thinking maybe Rocchio should not be batting ninth if he's one of only four offense like hitters you can trust in the postseason. You probably got to move him up from the nine hole simply because, I mean, maybe Jimenez should be batting ninth because he's hitting 190 in the postseason, or your catcher should be ninth, something like that. The second leadoff thing doesn't work as well when nobody else is getting on, because then that, I mean, you got to have more, you got to give him more opportunities to come to the plate. Six hits, one walk in the game for Cleveland's all they got. And the concern I have now is they're throwing their best hitter or their best pitcher tonight in Tanner Bibee, but he's facing Gerrit Cole, who had a rough outing in game one of the last series, but turned around with a dominant performance. I think it was game four. And this really feels like this is going to be a 2-0 Yankees lead after tonight, simply based on the way these teams have played so far. And the fact that New York's been getting this done without Aaron Judge doing anything.
Yeah, you can't expect to win game two if Gerrit Cole's on the mound. You can't. I mean, what he's shown, especially over the last
Guardians can't expect to.
Right. Yeah, correct.
New York can't.
Apologies. Yeah, you can't. If Gerrit Cole is going to be on the mound, you have to expect you're going to go down 2-0. You have to expect that. Rodon was your chance to get that early 1-0 lead, and he shoved. He looked really good. He bounced back really nicely after his start against Royals. Six innings, three hits, only one run allowed with nine strikeouts. And then the bullpen looks good too. Yeah, and that's huge because Rondon has had some struggles with that as well. Clay Holmes looks good. I think Clay Holmes has found his spot coming in right after the pitcher.
Being the seventh inning.
I mean, that's great. Look, if you can have a former closer who can clutch and who can be a really good closer at one point in time, he was seen as the best closer in baseball just last year, Lindsay. If you can have him be a dominant seventh inning guy, great. Speaking of best closers, are we putting Luke Weaver in that conversation right now? Is it a little too early? He's looking really good.
Yeah, Luke Weaver comes in relief of Tim Hill in the eighth, is asked to get a 5-out save. He does, one walk, no hits, strikes out 4. So, you know, he only faces, 6 batters, strikes out 4 of them, just really absolutely gave Cleveland no shot to try to get back into this game late. And fourth save of the postseason now. In the postseason, 6 innings, 9 hits, he's picked up 4 saves, has not allowed an earned run. And it's just something where he didn't work out as a starter, right? He made 25...
They claimed him off waivers.
Yeah. He made 25 starts last year, 21 for Cincinnati, 1 for Seattle, 3 for New York, combined for a 6.40 ERA. This year, solely as a reliever for New York. In the regular season, 62 games, 7-3 record, 2.89 ERA, 22 holds, and 4-for-4 on save opportunities. I'm at the point of I'm wondering, do the Yankees try to in the offseason to convert him back into a starter, knowing that they have fixed lots of guys in the past? They're a good pitching development organization. Or do they just keep him and say, hey, you're our closer now. You've got more pitches than the usual closer has. You can throw 3 or 4 pitches competently, but you've been amazing in the postseason. We're just going to keep you as the closer next year. What happens here?
He was DFA'd twice last year by the Reds and the Mariners. I think Wild. That you keep him in the closer role. After what happened with Clay Holmes this year, you thought you had a sure thing with Clay Holmes. I don't think many Yankees fans saw the downfall of Clay Holmes happening. Don't think we'd. I mean, I'm not a Yankees fan, but I didn't see that coming either. I think you keep Weaver in that closer role and you ride it till it dies, Lindsay. You ride it till it dies because the Yankees have enough money, one, and enough pieces to make a pretty solid rotation. The biggest question we've had all season long going into the postseason for the Yankees was their bullpen. So I think you ride that till it dies. So I'm going there. But yeah, I think you have to put him in the conversation, at least in the postseason, for what he's done over the last month or so. That he is currently probably the best, at least one of the top, I'll say top three, not three, closers in baseball right now.
I mean, if you look at the closers playing, there's only 4 left. So it makes sense there. I think I need to see a full body of work as a closer versus just a reliever to say that he is, but I'll absolutely agree that he has been, he's one of the best ones left, right? You look at a lot of his peripheral stats this year, his whiffs, his chases, he's all 80th, 85th, 95th percentile in a lot of stuff, strikeout rate of 31%, a lot of things you really like to see. He is a fly ball pitcher, you get worried about that, only had, you know, like a 37% ground ball rate, but fastball looks really good. He's another multiple fastball guy, fastball and a cutter, throws a changeup as well. And so for a right-handed pitcher, and I haven't pulled the numbers, so I could be wrong on this, but an arsenal like that, that's fastball, cutter, changeup, that obviously moves back to the arm side, I feel like he's not going to struggle as much with lefties as you would expect. Simply because the cutter's not moving very far in on a lefty, and everything else, the fastball staying up and the changeup's moving away. I feel like you have a little bit of lefty protection here because it's not like if you miss with anything, odds are it's not going to miss in the heart of the zone because so much of your stuff is moving away from them. He does throw a curveball a little bit, used it like 1% of the time this year, but that 3-pitch mix I think is a little bit not unusual. It's just different from what we're used to seeing. And I like it. I like the combination of these things. The four seam or the change of the cutter. It's kind of unique from a closer. I can't think of many closers that have an arsenal like that, that aren't throwing 100 miles an hour like Emmanuel Clase is.
Tanner Beebe on the mound for game 2, Lindsay. And I have to say this, the only thing that they have going for them is that the fact that they only have 20 plate appearances against him. There's only allowed 1 home run against the current Yankee. Can you guess who it is?
It's probably going to be somebody I'm not expecting, but I'm going to go on a limb just because this is the case for most guys. Aaron Judge.
No, it's not. And you would think that. He actually has not even seen Aaron Judge, according to Baseball Savant. So
that's going to be fun.
We'll see. You know, can Aaron Judge get his bat going against the guy he's never seen before? That'll be interesting. But it's the great and powerful and big bat of Anthony Volpe. That's the only one home run that they have against Tanner Beebe is Anthony Volpe, 1-for-3 in plate appearances, and that only hit he has is a home run. Against the current Yankees batters, Tanner Beebe is 6-for-20. He has a 10% strikeout ratio. He's allowed 6 hits, 2 extra base hits. I think it's going to be an interesting game. I think it's going to be interesting. I think we're seeing a lot of hits for New York. And you go ahead and predict it right now. I think New York goes up 2-0.
I do too. And this feels like it's a matter of time until some other Yankees hitter joins Soto and Stanton in the just getting hot club. You know, and this is something both those guys obviously homered yesterday. Soto in the first. I'm sorry, Soto in the third. Stanton, I think, in the seventh. But Aaron Judge could explode. Jazz Chisholm's been very quiet in the postseason. Goes over four, two strikeouts yesterday. But just guys that could absolutely do something and could explode. And it feels like tonight, Anthony Volpe's had streaks this year where he's been hot. Hasn't been most of the year, but started the year pretty hot. It feels like something's coming here. Something's going to give. And I worry the thing it's going to give is going to be Cleveland's pitching. The Yankees offense breaks through. I also agree it's going to be 0-2 as they get ready to move into back to Cleveland for three games. It's going to be 0-2, and it'll be a lot less drama here than it would be in the NLCS, which picks back up on Wednesday.
What would be better for baseball, Lindsay? A Subway Series between the Yankees and Mets, or the Dodgers against the Yankees in the World Series, East Coast, West Coast, between the two biggest markets in baseball?
Honestly, as much as the Subway Series would be really convenient for Rob Manfred, because it's all going to be there in New York, they probably want Ohtani versus Judge simply so that they can promote the heck out of those two guys. Neither one of those sounds very appealing. I got to be honest. It's like the Mets or the Dodgers. Neither one of those sounds super appealing. And it's not because I'm a Braves fan. It's because it's a New York team or it's the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm going to say, I guess the Mets, because it's a better story, right? The Dodgers, if the Dodgers make the World Series, then a lot of the conversation's going to be, one, they're going to get beat over the head with Shohei Ohtani. A lot of the conversation's going to be, from fans, is going to be, well, yeah, they spent $1.4 billion in the offseason. Of course they should be in the World Series. I do think it would be the discourse around the Dodgers supposedly underachieving if they don't make the World Series would be really interesting to hear. I would expect some in the fan base to want Dave Roberts to be fired if they don't make the World Series, despite everything they've dealt with, Freddie's injury, Mookie missing time, the rotation injuries, which... I'm going to say this real quick. I know we're over on time. We have to stop feeling bad for the Los Angeles Dodgers that they've had all of these rotation injuries, because they deliberately have been targeting injury-prone arms because they can. It's the talent versus price ratio is a little bit better going for guys that have been injury-prone. Their strategy in the draft, in free agency, in trades, has been, we can go get as many talented but injury-prone arms as possible, knowing that we have the organizational depth to be able to withstand a few injuries. They've had a few more than they probably expected, but this was the plan. You don't trade for Tyler Glasnow and give him, I think, a five-year extension unless you are comfortable getting injured players. And so to feel bad for them for the rotation injuries, I think is a little bit not quite understanding. They deliberately chose this. And it's just frustrating to hear, oh, they've overcome so much adversity. It's self-imposed. It's like the dude who overcomes adversity because he has to walk to his job because he has no driver's license because he's been arrested for DUI multiple times. Like, he chose to drink and drive. That's his bad. You can point out this isn't great while understanding it's his fault. And in some, not exact, not a perfect analogy, but the Dodgers have specifically chosen injury-prone arms because they like that they can get more talented players that some teams won't be interested in because of the injuries. Because most teams can't stand to lose two rotation arms during the season. The
Speak
Dodgers...
for yourself, Lindsay. That was a perfect analogy.
Thank you. All right. So 7:38 p.m. tonight to wrap this up. 7:38 p.m. tonight, Cleveland at New York. Again, Tanner Bibee versus Garrett Cole. That'll be on TBS. And then Wednesday, Dodgers versus Mets. Walker Buehler versus Luis Severino at 8:08 on FS1. Again, we are back tomorrow to break down what happened tonight between Cleveland and New York. Only one game. We'll probably catch up on some other stories like Clayton Kershaw announcing he's back for 2025. We'll get to that tomorrow. In the meantime, if you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a five-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, tell your friends. They can go out, they can go to firstpitchpodcast.com to find First Pitch and get a daily MLB recap every single weekday morning as we go all the way through the postseason. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.